1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2.
Let me tell you how it will be. There's 1 for you, 19 for me. 'Cause I'm the tax man. Yeah, I'm the tax man.
Your brain is taxed, your nerves are shot, your emotions are raw, and it's only Monday. Send in the therapy animals. But if you have allergies, don't worry. There's always the online variety. Video, memes, GIFs, Instagram accounts, even the classic email can deliver a shot of furry content your way. And most of us are grateful for it. In times of high anxiety, we seem particularly drawn to cuteness, and not only in animals. Babies and toddlers, emojis, toys, mascots. There's a whole world of cute out there. Our attraction seems obvious. Cute things are just plain nice. Their lightness counters the heavier aspects of life. But underneath this soft and fuzzy surface, it turns out that cuteness has many layers.
We have a phenomenon that is almost everywhere and increasing all the time, and yet people continually dismiss it as too trivial.
Hello Kitty, female-linked product from Japan, is in some ways a very convenient way to talk about race and gender and consumption.
Even if cute objects and the cute sensibility are trivial, what the craze for it tells us about our world isn't at all trivial.
So in this episode, exploring the nature and appeal of cute, scientifically and culturally, historically and in our tense present. In this documentary, The Complexity of Cuteness, from Ideas producer Lisa Godfrey.
New Year's is a time of celebration. I'm Spanish, you see.
Certainly are. I can tell by the fly.
More or less. Is that Castilian soap you're using for your leeches?
Oh, I never checked. That's very cute. I'll have to check.
You talk like a Castilian, you know that.
Well, just because of my lisp. Yeah. You're cute.
Thank you.
He lisps.
Smile.
Conrad Lorenz, an ethnologist back in the 1940s through 1970s, he wrote a lot about what it is that makes us find something cute. And he, in particular, in the 70s, thought that we find things cute when they have big eyes, big bulging heads, big cheeks, small noses, and all these features. And if you actually look at some of the drawings and writings he did about the types of animals we think are cute and why, they match Baby Yoda pretty well.
So is it hardwired?
I think so. And the why of that is not so clear, right? So we don't exactly know why it's hardwired within us to find these features cute. Lorenz thought it was about having like an innate set of features that would trigger a caregiving response in adults. So he thought it was evolutionarily adaptive for that reason, to kind of make sure that infantile-like things make us want to take care of them.
And not only in the parental sense, as I understand it, but when we see another person's child, or even if we don't have children ourselves, that caregiving response might be triggered by cuteness.
Exactly. And I think, you know, all of us who have any pets know that, right? They're not our children, but we treat them that way sometimes. And certainly we feel that way about other people's children or about small baby animals of other species. And we do tend to want to take care of them, which again is adaptive for the species as a whole, because if something were to happen to their actual evolutionarily, their parents, we could imagine it would be adaptive for another adult to want to step in and take a caretaking role, even if it wasn't their blood-related child.
Oh, that son of mine.
He's not your son, Fred.
Stop torturing me, Ethel.
What does that mean for vulnerable or young creatures that might not fit the whole Lorenz baby schema or have that cute appearance.
Most infantile creatures at least have some of those features. I mean, I'm sure I could find like a baby fish that does not, but at least most baby mammals, I think, do tend to have those features, like these heads that are kind of almost too big for their body and their eyes are super big compared to the rest of their face. So I do think there's something evolutionarily to that, but that doesn't mean every single species evolved that way.
We're trying to add a little class to the radio station here now that we've got the Air Force moved into the Syracuse, Rome, Oswego area. Isn't that right, Pat?
I was down there visiting launching pad just yesterday. Yeah. There's a fine bunch of men down there. Fine bunch of men.
Sure is.
Fine bunch of men. A lot of fine little animals down there, too.
Well, they're across the highway now.
They're going to be surprised. They're definitely by those rockets.
They're working on a lot of animals. You see the new uniforms they're wearing down there?
Those little blue ones?
Yeah, they got the bunnies in the white gauze suits, right?
Those
and they got the squirrels
nice.
In little blue jumpsuits with the zippers right down by their nose.
Yeah.
It's really nice, man. I mean, like, I think that what the Air Force is trying to do to keep wildlife alive near the big Boom Boom Air Base, I think that's the name, named after Boom Boom Vietnam, which unfortunately is no longer with us. They're doing a wonderful thing. They've got all the snakes wrapped in electrical tape to keep them from burning, right?
That's really
good. Yeah.
And they got sunglasses for them, too, little contact lenses.
All beautiful.
They shaded. Got
all the field mice are in baggies.
Yeah,
that protects them.
They amputated their ears.
No, really?
Yeah.
That's breeding, really. A lot of the men there are into field mice and small rodent breeding. You know, it keeps them occupied, keeps their hands from going crazy.
And it keeps the fences working. Excuse me, but...
I'm sorry.
Fences have to electrocute a certain amount of small animals every month or they won't pay back their initial investment.
Their power investment, Phil.
I'm sorry.
Do you think there's an uptick in sort of cute seeking?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's been an uptick in any sort of positive emotion seeking, right? Because everything is pretty uncertain. We have no control, and that creates a ton of anxiety and negative feelings.
Tony?
Yes, Ned?
Remember when you had to bring smelly old Irish priests into your house to rid loved ones of hideous demons like Beelzebub, Katzenberg, Obits, and Cher?
I sure do.
Tony, are you tired of pea stains on your Persians and pea soup flashed all over your ice-cold bedroom floor?
I sure am.
Well, your prayers have been answered.
No!
Here's the man with the machine that's turning heads all over Christendom.
Thank you, Ned, and hello, folks. Are you excited?
Yes!
I'm excited! Let's not wait a second! Let me bring in our world-class discoverer and valedictorian of the Guadalajara Overnight School of Medicine, the inventor of the Devil Master, Dr. Bill Infirmo!
Thank you.
Bill, what in the name of all that's holy possessed you to invent this infernal machine?
Well, as you know, Tony, everybody has one or two great thoughts, and mine was simple. We're all doomed.
Okay, bad dinker.
A good starting point. I think we can agree with that.
So, where do we go from here?
Well, then I had a second thought. I thought to myself that just because you're surrounded by evil doesn't mean you can't make some money from it.
Oh, I know we can all agree with that, can't we?
So, how does it work, Bill?
Well, Ned, unlike most demon expulsion machines, the Devil Master by Infirm Co. totally rotates the entire upper body while the head remains stationary.
Uh-huh.
Its eyes fixed on the money it's going to make. No, on the money you're going to make.
Wait a minute. Are you saying out demons out and in profits in?
Yes, I am.
That's wonderful!
That's incredible!
I think so, too. Now, boys, here's the best part. We have a young star here from, remember, Corn Cousins, the Shuttling?
Here she
is, teenage vixen Esther Woodrosen.
Hi.
And she's working out on my Devil Master.
Look at that body!
What's that smell?
Makes your head spin!
I think that's Asphodel coming out of her orifice. Now stand back, boys. Roll up your pants.
Wait a minute. What's that?
What is that?
That's the Devil Master Exerciser GT. Send your credit card now to What Would Seiku Say, WrestleMania, Minnesota.
So I think most of us want to find some glimmer of positive. Cute things do that for us. So I do think that, yeah.
You know a lot about the inner workings of cuteness. Can you still sort of unselfconsciously find things cute?
Yes, I do not have a problem with that. I just think it's really cool to be able to have both a scientific and personal perspective on these types of things. It doesn't make me less able to see it. I think it makes me just more aware of why I might be feeling a certain way. My husband and I have had a lot of really fascinating conversations about how the two of us experience cute aggression differently. So I say things like, oh, I want to squish it. I want to punch it. It's so cute. And I kind of like ball up my fists. And he says, like, he doesn't feel that way at all. What he does is he notices his jaw is tight because he's clenching his jaw really tightly, almost like it's like a biting, nipping response for him.
In this area. And it's just starting now.
The night before I went to the dentist's, my sister and I were playing at dentist's. She stamped on the floor that made the chair go up. She then switched on a light. She used a pair of pliers out of my tool set for the pinchers. She used my bubble hat for the gas mask. She used a pudding dish for the thing that you spit your blood into. She used a poker for the drill and a glass of water for the mouthwash. She tied me to the chair with some thick string and tied a hanky round my neck. She got a lollipop stick and pressed my tongue back to see which tooth to pull out. She put a bit of rock in my mouth to keep it open and put my bubble hat on me. She took it off and got the pair of pliers and pretended to pull out my tooth. She took a look at it and then gave me the water and I pretended to wash out my mouth. She untied the hanky, but she didn't untie me from the chair. She hit me about 10 times and then ran off. I shouted, Mom, to come and untie me. After the next time we play, she's definitely going to be the patient. Simon Mark Abbey, age 8.
So if anything, I think it's just even more interesting to kind of look into ourselves a little bit and talk to people I know about it and say, wait, what's it like for you? This is a cool scientific phenomenon.
Humans are weird and magical.
We are so weird.
I had been living in Japan a long time, and of course I was aware of Japanese cuteness, but I never thought much about it. And then one day I walked out of my apartment and I saw these road construction barriers. Usually they just have little orange and white signs on them, but these signs were of Hello Kitties holding up rainbows, like an endless series of Hello Kitties vanishing into the distance.
Now let me show you something, Bozo. Detailed dress circuits.
Belt above A, below B.
Below B. Okay, close B, close mode.
Oh, my duck, his pants have disappeared. Kid, everybody's watching.
Oh, come on now, watch this. Ego.
Go!
Close artichoke mode.
It's a rainbow. Oh, now what happened to little Artie?
Prepare shift simulfax for human form. Prepare mirror clone.
What are you doing?
Clone me.
Oh, that's, I think that's against the rules.
Legal entry.
Clone me, Dr. Memory.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm a Clem.
It's you.
No, Barney, I'm me. That's just a hologram.
And I thought, what's going on? So I would have left it there, but I began to notice that there were other kinds of construction barriers with other cute objects like cute frogs and cute dolphins and cute monkeys. And that's when I started to get interested, when cuteness started to spill over into ordinary public life and not just advertising or toys.
Hold it right there, player. You can't go no further. Cuju vines done took over the town. You better get out while you can. I think Route 66 is still open.
No, the game has started all over again.
I can give you the moose discount.
You did.
What? Hey, it's you!
Well, what are you waiting for?
What are you waiting for?
Aren't you going to take 66?
Oh, Jeter, don't be hysterical.
No, before in the game, before I met you when I was playing, it's a dead end.
Yeah, but not with me alone.
Hey, all right!
Oh, hey, you're so smart. Try this one. Why does a porridge bird lay its egg in the air?
Oh, Laura, that's the old leprechaun scam. That's easy.
I'm Joshua Paul Dale. I'm a professor at Tokyo Gakugei University, and my specialty is cute studies.
Spending 25-plus years in a country that essentially claims cute as its national brand might do that to you, but for Joshua Dale, it's more than that.
We have a phenomenon that is almost everywhere and increasing all the time, and yet people continually dismiss it as too trivial. Think about cuteness worldwide. It's a multi-billion dollar phenomenon. The four top media franchises in the world, highest grossing media franchises in the world, Pokemon, Hello Kitty, Winnie the Pooh, Mickey Mouse. Cuteness is often thought of as a women's aesthetic, and I think that's one of the reasons it has been trivialized. It's pure sexism. People thought, well, women are into it, so it's not important, and I disagree, and I wanted to check that out.
As you may know, kawaii is the Japanese term for cuteness.
It really became popularized in the early 20th century by an illustrator called Takeshi Himeji, who's still famous today. There are three or four museums in Japan devoted to his work. And he opened up his shop in Tokyo in 1914, and he used the word kawaii to refer to his designs.
But kawaii is more than just cute things. It's expressive.
Kawaii is more of an effective adjective, meaning you say it when you feel it. So if you say kawaii, it means you're feeling the emotion at that moment. Of course, cute can work in the same way, and often does, but we have another meaning of cute, and you can use it in a snarky way. You can say, oh, that's cute.
Oh, that's cute. Drop your anchor and half a pint of oil with Stinkin' Olaf.
Well, thank you, Captain Stinkin'. I would rather fancy an ale.
Can't really do that with kawaii.
At first, kawaii design was associated with soft things, wistful, ethereal, pastel. But its qualities are ever-changing.
The churn of kawaii is very rapid, so there are new trends coming out all the time. And I think this is one of the reasons why it interests people outside Japan and also surprises them, because kawaii always seems to be a little bit different. And that's because it's always changing. So you have a boom in mixing kawaii things with slightly disgusting things. So you have cute skulls and cute eyeballs. And now we have baby metal, heavy metal groups from Japan that are formed of young women and do cute things on stage. And that surprised people. But baby metal has become quite prominent in the heavy metal community, and they have a lot of fans.
Kawaii is a relatively modern concept, but it has ancient roots in Japan.
You can trace the history of kawaii back 1,000 years. The Pillar Book, written by Sei Shonagon, who was an attendant to the Empress in the city now called Kyoto. She wrote a book that was part diary and part lists of things that she could talk about to the Empress, because her job as a court attendant was to entertain the Empress. In a world where women had really limited contact with the outside world, it was almost a cloister. So she wrote a list of things that she didn't use the word kawaii because it didn't exist at the time, but are things that we would now consider cute.
Such as?
The outline of a child's face drawn on a melon is the first item. Or when you see a small boy wearing formal ceremonial robes walking by, trying really hard to act dignified. Or small sparrows, cheeping sparrows and birds and things like that.
I sat down to rest with my back against a stump. The sun was warm in the glade, and the murmurs of forest life blurred softly away into my sleep. When I awoke, dimly aware of some commotion and outcry in the clearing, the light was slanting down through the pines in such a way that the glade was lit like some vast cathedral. I could see the dust motes of wood pollen in the long shaft of light, and there on the extended branch sat an enormous raven with a red and squirming nestling in its beak. The sound that awoke me was the outraged cries of the nestling's parents, who flew helplessly in circles about the clearing. The sleek black monster was indifferent to them. He gulped, wetted his beak on the dead branch a moment, and sat still. Up to that point, the little tragedy had followed the usual pattern, but suddenly, out of all that area of woodland, a soft sound of complaint began to rise. Into the glade fluttered small birds of half a dozen varieties, drawn by the anguished outcries of the tiny parents. No one dared to attack the raven, but they cried there in some instinctive common misery, the bereaved and the unbereaved. The glade filled with their soft rustling and their cries. They fluttered as though to point their wings at the murderer. There was a dim, intangible ethic he had violated that they knew. He was a bird of death. And he, the murderer, the black bird at the heart of life, sat on there, glistening in the common light, formidable, unmoving, unperturbed, untouchable. The sighing died. It was then I saw the judgment. It was the judgment of life against death. I will never see it again so forcefully presented. I will never hear it again in notes so tragically prolonged. For in the midst of protest, they fought the violence. There, in that clearing, the crystal note of a song sparrow lifted hesitantly in the hush. And finally, after painful fluttering, another took the song, and then another, the song passing from one bird to another, doubtfully at first, as though some evil thing were being slowly forgotten, till suddenly they took heart and sang from many throats joyously together, as birds are known to sing. They sang because life is sweet and sunlight beautiful. They sang under the brooding shadow of the raven. In simple truth, they had forgotten the raven, for they were the singers of life and not of death.
Now, of course, that's 1,000 years ago, and people now are not the same as then. But this book and that passage has been known to Japanese people from that time. And even today, it's studied by every student in Japan in school. Everyone knows it. So it has influenced the modern kawaii culture.
The modern era of kawaii started with the turn of the 20th century and the rise of student life.
There was a change worldwide in education. Schools became mandatory for all children during that time. So now we had a period when children, instead of being sent out to work, which they were before, they were now going to school.
Call the next witness.
What do you think I ought to call him, Judge?
I don't know. We don't have a name for him. He never went to school.
Well, then, the people calls to the stand, you.
Don't point at me, Daddy. I'll cut off your finger.
No. You, the second man from the rear over there. You, the man with no shoes.
Who, me?
You.
Mudhead? Oh, golly.
You promise to covet property, propriety, plurality, surety, security, and not hurt the state? Say what?
What?
Take your stand.
Now then, Mr. Head.
Hi, Mr. Tirebiter. You know me.
Do you know the defendant?
Do I know Porgy?
And you spend all your free time with him?
Sure, except when he's in school.
So you don't go to school?
Heck no. I'm 30 years old.
In Japan, the image of the schoolgirl became centered around private girls' academies, which were only really available to the upper classes. And being a schoolgirl represented a time after childhood and before marriage. that was a time of like limitless freedom of the mind, if not the body.
This elite schoolgirl culture was aspirational.
And there are many illustrators and writers who capitalized on the interest in private girls' academies and spread it out to all the classes. So a middle-class girl couldn't go to that expensive school, but she could buy a fan with a cute design or a hair clip or postcards. And those illustrators especially mixed some Western elements into their designs in order to make them appeal more to young girls. So you'd have like playing cards as a motif or Western style umbrellas, along with, you know, kimono and other things that were more traditional.
Joshua Dale says that the next great wave of kawaii was post-1968, that tumultuous year for students everywhere.
Kawaii culture started its current boom in the 1970s, and it was partially a result of the student protest movement.
1968, a year of change, a year of protest. Protest through vocal but orderly demonstration, and protest through murderous lunacy.
We tend to think of that in Europe and North America as a successful movement that actually created change. But in Japan, it totally failed.
Failed to stop Premier Sato's successful visit to the U.S.
They were trying to protest the close relationship with the United States, which was involved in the Vietnam War. That relationship didn't change.
The Oz Fire Sign Theater, in cooperation with
the Belgian Radio and Television Service,
Das Deutsche Rund- und Blaupunktgesellschaft,
the All India Radio Pakasab Blue Network,
El Radio Servicio Internacional Bolivia,
the BBC Home Service,
and the BBC Tea Service,
ici Paris, Radio Diffusion Française,
All People Radio Free People's Republic,
Peking Radio,
and Out of Sight Radio in Los Angeles, KPFK,
presents International Youth on Parade.
The world today is in a peck of trouble. Disrespect and turmoil are everywhere. From Maine to California, across the wide blue oceans, on continents all over the wide world, in far and widely distant lands, wherever the sun shines, there is disrespect and turmoil. And everywhere where there is disrespect and turmoil, there is youth. International Youth on Parade.
Well, folks, here we are in Paris, land of the Eiffel Tower. A significant group of French students have gathered here under the beautiful Arc de Triomphe to protest the state of international youth. And I have with me the spokesman of the group.
I am Jean Thiemoil, and I'm very happy to be able to talk to the world in this way.
Jean, could you tell the audience what is the nature of your protest today?
Well, for the first time, we are trying a technique borrowed from the American friends. It is the loving. There's not enough love in the world. There's not enough love between different political factions. There's not enough love between, for instance, the communist and the fascist in our society. There's not enough love between the older people, the younger people. There's not enough love between me and anybody. This is the only time I get to love anybody.
Well, what is different about the method and technique? I noticed that there's a very interesting scene going under here, under the picturesque Arc de Triomphe.
Yes, you notice, for the first time, it's not only the male students who are going to be beaten up. We have today both the co-educational and the female students, and you will notice that... Excuse me, a moment. Hey, Michel, comment ça va? Michel, look, je parle sur Ali maintenant, I can totally... Go lie down, Michel. Yes, I'm sorry.
You were saying that this love-in is different from your other protests.
Yes,
how is that?
Well, I would like to explain, first of all, that the gendarmes usually attack us with a leaden cloak, you know? So for the first time, we have put in leaden blankets and stopped the traffic pattern. You see, we have led them out here, and
I think the audience is... Jean, I think the audience is really interested in knowing what is the political manifestation of this protest.
Yes, well, first of all, I want to make very clear, we are not the communist. We are not fascist. Michel, je ne peux pas. Je ne peux pas.
Where do you think? Excuse me, Jean, just if I could just have a few minutes of your time. Just where do you think the protest here is going to go in terms of international
youth? We want to go all the way to the top. We're going to the minister. Michel, please.
Well, that's very interesting. If we could just have the, you say the minister.
But it's starting. It's starting. I've got to get over there with Michel right now. A bientôt, babes. Michel, attends.
Allons, enfants de la patrie. Le jeu de
and as the sun sets over the picturesque writhing bodies under the picturesque Arc de Triomphe, we bid a picturesque farewell to Paris.
Michel.
Historical land of love and lovers.
Michel, ma belle.
The disillusioned students backed away from politics
and turned towards interior worlds like manga and anime. And that is also the time that Hello Kitty appeared.
Hello Kitty, konnichiwa.
So a lot of young women became more and more interested in cute things and stories and images around that time. And when they became adults, they didn't lose that interest. They kept buying Hello Kitty. They kept reading a manga for adults that included cute themes.
As a Westerner, Joshua Dale notices something else about Japan.
The image of adulthood is quite negative and even dark. When I talk to my students about it, I say, you know, are you looking forward to graduating and joining the working world? And their answers are very ambivalent because their image of adulthood is one of like responsibility and working all the time and not having time to yourself, not being able to explore your own interests. So kawaii can help with that because it becomes a refuge from the world of adulthood. In Japan, the mascots are often used to promote local areas, to get people to go back to their hometowns or to visit other places in Japan and the countryside and buy local products.
There are thousands of them, even in small villages, and they have a distinctive look.
They mix elements that are famous products from that local area. So they might have a head that looks like a bowl of ramen, and yet they're supposed to be a bear because it's in the forest and there are bears around.
In that future American era, I shall enter a new form to cure the world of loveless knowledge that seeks with blind hunger and mindless rage, eating food that will not fill it. And he showed himself in his true form of Smokey the Bear. A handsome, smoky-colored brown bear standing on his hind legs, showing that he is aroused and watchful, bearing in his right paw the shovel that digs to the truth beneath appearances, cuts the roots of useless attachments, and flings damp sand on the fires of greed and war. His left paw in the mudra of comradely display, indicating that all creatures have the full right to live to their limits, and that deer, rabbits, chipmunks, snakes, dandelions, and lizards all grow in the realm of the Dharma. Wearing the blue work overall symbolic of slaves and laborers, the countless men oppressed by a civilization that claims to save but only destroys. Wearing the broad-brimmed hat of the West, symbolic of the forces that guard the wilderness, which is the natural state of the Dharma and the true path of man on earth. All true paths lead through mountains. With a halo of smoke and flame behind, the forest fires of the Kali Yuga, fires caused by the stupidity of those who think things can be gained and lost, whereas in truth all is contained, vast and free, in the blue sky and green earth of one mind.
Round-bellied to show his kind nature, and that the great earth has food enough for everyone who loves her and trusts her.
Trampling underfoot wasteful freeways and needless suburbs, smashing the worms of capitalism and totalitarianism.
Indicating the task, his followers becoming free of cars, houses, canned food, universities, and shoes. Master the three mysteries of their own body, speech, and mind. And fearlessly chop down the rotten trees and prune out the sick limbs of this country, America, and then burn the leftover trash.
Wrathful but calm, austere but comic, Smokey the Bear will illuminate those who would help him. But for those who would hinder or slander him, he will put them out.
Watching people gathering around mascots at an event Joshua Dale noticed a kind of communication taking place.
People in the crowd were waving at them, including adults, but I knew that the people inside the costumes couldn't see out well enough to actually see everyone waving at them. But of course they were waving back because it's their job.
They're just workers in costumes. And yet...
Of course, children love to run up and give the mascot a hug. But adults do that too. Now remember, these suits are not close to the body. They're built out. So you're not actually hugging a person. You just feel fur.
Or fur's polyester equivalent. A ramen bear is not a creature we recognize from nature. It's not a baby. It's not a puppy or a kitten. But our desire to connect with cuteness, to engage and even communicate with it, is evident.
Tonight, let's talk about Japan, a nation so vibrant, not even Sofia Coppola and the band Air could make it boring. Japan, like every country, has struggled to engage its people with government programs and services. That's why they've come up with a quintessentially Japanese solution, mascots.
These are mascot characters created for local districts throughout Japan to promote the areas. Apparently, there are now over 1,500 such mascots.
1,500 mascots. So if you're in Japan and you throw a rock, you'll probably hit one. And you'll know it when it happens because you'll probably hear an adorable squeaking sound. And it's not just local districts, tourism boards. There are official mascots for everything. Some cities have dozens of mascots. This is Noru Run, a mascot for a train line. And this is Katakuri-chan, the mascot for a notorious Japanese prison.
How am I to be not insane while suffering terrific torment of a radio prison? Oh, Mickey-san, my topless flower of Toiko Delight, oh baby, where are you now? Do you take a fast tube train to International Atomic Occupation of Bandit Police Headquarters to a weeping, implore, arrogant lieutenant of Bradshaw for my immediate withdrawal from this dangerous exposition? Oh, don't know how much a tough guy detective can now take in of it be! Even a poor young guy, a new character enter.
Yes, young guy find himself trapped in a radio prison under Nikoban Naranese restaurant on the number one street. And, oh, what worse, a barrel full of deadly Ajinomoto set to go off at end of meal.
That's right. Their prisons have mascots. And you've got to admit, The Shawshank Redemption would be a very different movie if every now and then that thing was walking around in the background. That's a different film. That's a very different film. And the thing is, mascots can be big business. Just look at Kumamon, one area's lovable bear mascot. He has brought in an estimated $1.2 billion over 2 years. And if you're wondering why, take a look at this. That's it. I am done interacting with humans now. If you ever want to talk to me, wear a Kumamon outfit or get the f***. And the thing is, he's not even the most popular. That title goes to Funashi, a giant genderless pair representing the city of Funabashi. And not only does Funashi hold press conferences, he does some pretty incredible TV appearances. Let me show you just one. I don't know why anyone is still watching this show or any other show now that they know that that video exists somewhere. Mascots have become such a feature of political life in Japan that foreign embassies are even being compelled to play along.
The Israeli embassy in Japan has unveiled its new mascot to the public, a parrot holding an olive branch named Shalom Chan.
I believe some Japanese will see Israel like this character.
Look, he People see Israel a lot of different ways, but I don't think there is anyone on earth that sees it as that character. But that just proves the power mascots have to reach out and engage people, although not all are instantaneously lovable. For example, the prefecture of Nara is represented by Sentokun, a shirtless boy creature with antlers on his head, who looks like the result of Andre Agassi reindeer. Or there's the objectively terrifying Melon Kumar, an angry bear with a melon for a head who represents Yubari. Now, let's watch a local school visit going exactly how you'd imagine it would. It's got bloody teeth and a melon for a head. The problem is, the sheer scale of publicly funded mascots has become a problem. Last year, the Japanese Finance Ministry tried to crack down on them, describing some as a waste of public funds, which is ridiculous. Because not only should Japan not be cutting back, we in America should be creating our own mascots to engage people with government agencies. In fact, I'll do some for you right now. If you want the embodiment of justice, forget about that boring blindfolded lady. Let me introduce you to Scales, the blind iguana. You need someone to make immigration and customs enforcement a bit friendlier? Well, meet Hamilton the pig in a sailor hat. Look out, he's coming to deport you.
Because of us, it's morning in America.
Breakfast, honey?
Thanks. Hey, is this real pork?
Because of us, people in the Great Plains are just plain doing things. Little things, like taking money from machines.
Hey, stop, kid. I'm not a machine.
Because of us, they're roasting East Coast marshmallows on the West Coast.
Wow, these taste like pork.
We're the people of U.S. Plus. Guess what we do?
Chemistry? Transportation? Pork?
Kind of. U.S. Plus. We own the idea of America.
All right, guys, so I am currently in the Hello Kitty section of Toys R Us, so let's go and see what they have. So they have this Hello Kitty toaster.
Swerve
Dodge him.
Trick him.
Push him over.
Tell him lies.
Here's where robots' rules of order don't apply. At Hideo Nuts, Bolt-a-Drone.
As seen on Who Asked For It. Strap on the servo mitts and pit your metal against common household appliances.
Step right up.
Let's go.
Think you could go three rounds with this water heater sailor? Looks easy, but sealed to the back of this metal mother is a radar-activated stamping and seizing module that'll keep a man punching until he's drunk with power. A man like you.
All up inside for Hideo Nuts, Bolt-a-Drone.
Come on, Barney.
And a further reclamation.
Come on, Barney.
Thank you.
We can take on a couple of toasters or something.
Look, kid, I dreamt I went there once, but fighting's out of style now.
Looks like her house, maybe? It's a digital camera.
Is this a diary?
Yeah, password diary.
As you can see, Kitty takes many forms. But at essence, she's a childlike figure in overalls with cat ears and a bow on her head. She has minimal features, but they're classic cute. Large head, big eyes, small nose.
Hello, Kitty. Konnichiwa.
One surprising fact is that this embodiment of Japan's kawaii culture is not actually meant to be Japanese.
When she was created in the 1970s, it was really an era of emerging girl culture, emerging girl consumer culture. It was also an era in which British storylines, British fairy tales were really popular in Japan. So to place a new character like Hello Kitty, to position her in London as part of a British family by the name of White, was not so far-fetched, and it was extremely appealing. Hello Kitty has legs, which moved her from the 1970s all the way into the 2000s quite well.
I was driving down Pacific Coast Highway. Just below Big Sur, there's a beach where the elephant seals come to mate, and to then they come back and they have children on the beach. And they're huge. I mean, they're enormous, wonderful beasts. And I get down there and there's a huge crowd at this one little kind of state park lookout place. And I go there and there's thousands of these elephant seals on the beach. Wow. And it's a rainy kind of windy day. And I get out of the car and I go over and I'm looking at them with everybody else. And all of a sudden, a huge Hello Kitty bus appears. And out from this Hello Kitty bus jump 25 Japanese teenagers, each wearing a different Hello Kitty outfit. This was enough. I mean, I said, thank you. I mean, no one's going to believe it, but look at this. It is so surreal. But that was only the beginning. So two of these young Japanese ladies come next to me, and one of them takes out her cell phone camera and takes a picture of the seals on the beach. She then proceeds to text that file to the girl next to her, and they spend the next 15 minutes looking at the pictures on the tiny screen on their phone, and then they all get into the Hello Kitty bus and go back to from whence they came. I was flabbergasted. I didn't show it because it's not a great idea to be flabbergasted in public, but there it is, you know, totally in touch, totally out of touch, everything at the speed of light. When I was growing up, you know, everything was basically at the speed of car, you know, and before that, basically everything was at the speed of train or the speed of the fast clipper. And in fact, in most of our history, we've been living at the speed of horse. Okay, speed of horse. What's this? Clip-clop, bang, clip-clop, bang, clip-clop, clip-clop, bang, bang, bang. That's an Amish drive-by shooting.
Stinking desert. Whoa. Last Indian reservation for 2,000 miles. You got 15 minutes, folks. Get them while you can. Get the senator back in the bus.
God for Daniel, pesky redskins. Which way's Goshen?
Bozo.
I'm a bozo.
Oh, yeah, I thought you had a kind of a big nose.
You recognized it, huh?
Yeah.
You'd like to give it a squeeze?
Oh, no.
Now, come on, squeeze the wheeze. Many people like to. Here. Yeah. See, it doesn't hurt me.
No.
You know, I think we're all bozos on this bus.
Oh.
Yeah. My mother was a bozoette at school.
No kidding. Well, you know, my ma always said, you gotta start young if you're gonna stick it out.
Little bozos sitting on a bus. One joined the Navy, now there's nine of us. Nine little bozos sitting in the draft. One went crazy and the rest all laughed. Eight dumb bozos riding in a van. They can't get there, then no one can.
Everyone's a bozo on this bus. Zips and Bean are sitting next to us. Are you a hostage? Are you a spy?
Just some berserker who's prepared to die. We left eight stupid bozos sitting in a tub. One got poached and had to leave the club. Seven mellow bozos with their brains all fried. One threw in the towel and the rest all cried. Six frightened bozos tied up in a spot. One dove out the window but the rest got caught.
Everyone's a bozo on this bus. Zips and Bean are sitting next to us. Are you a hostage? Are you a spy?
Or just some berserker who's prepared to die? Five red-nosed bozos burning in the sand. Things got so hot that one joined the band. That left four and there ain't no more. The driver got in and closed the door. Four angry bozos, no place to hide. The bus pulls out and we're on the ride. Well, there was never any doubt. out that the poor would make it. They kicked out the driver and they said, let's take it. They can afford to be bozos on a bus. They ain't afraid to use the word us. One thing sure for the final four, they know this bus won't go to war.
Well, everyone's a bozo on this bus. Simpson Peter sitting next to us. Are you a hostage? Are you a spy?
Just some berserker who's prepared to die. This bus
won't go.
This bus
won't go.
This bus
won't go to war.
Show, huh?
Oh, for boy, sure.
Yeah, were y'all convinced?
Yeah, sure.
I don't know. I'm going to have to see it again before I decide.
Yeah.
Well, whatever. The bus is over there if you don't want to go.
Oh, you mean the bus that isn't going?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Good. Well, I better not get on then.
No. Oh, come on. Follow me.
Let's go.
And she's in grade 3?
Perpetually so, a perpetual third grader. Now, you'll have to excuse me because I'm a little rusty on her dimensions. How many apples tall? How many apples does she weigh? That kind of thing. But it is certainly there on the website.
The Sanrio Corporation's website, that is. Here is the official bio, complete with fruit measurements.
As tall as 5 apples and as heavy as 3, Hello Kitty is a bright little girl with a heart of gold. She loves to bake cookies and play the piano, and dreams of one day becoming a pianist or maybe even a poet. She has a gift for music and English, and a soft spot for Mama's apple pie. Hello Kitty and her twin sister, Mimi, are the best of friends.
It is something that you talk about with a kind of giggle. And then I think it's for us to consider, what does that giggle mean?
All right, and then finally, cat, girl, or cat girl?
I'd say none of the above.
Ah.
I mean, this is part of the Japanese marketing, popular culture lore, that there is such a thing as what in Japanese will be called kyarakta, or in English, perhaps character. So whether this thing called Hello Kitty adheres more to a girl or a cat is in some ways less relevant than the fact that she adheres most to a kyarakta. Hello Kitty is always Hello Kitty.
I know I shouldn't be saying this, but stay with me, baby. Let me take care of you. I haven't got a soul in this world to care about. I don't even have a cat.
Oh, Nick. There's just something about you that incites pity in a girl like me. That part about the cat really got me.
Certain evangelical Christians in the U.S. have had moral objections around what they see as the cult of Kitty.
Did you know Egyptians worshipped cats? They had a goddess named Bastet. Satan wants the same cat to continue today, even in Christian homes. How can you get a cat to be worshipped in our homes? Hello Kitty has been one way.
Squares at the square dance, they're having real square fun. Lonely for the devil when the end is come.
I asked Christine Yano about it, but she was thinking more about our present moment.
Well, Hello Kitty, obviously female-linked product from Japan, is in some ways a very convenient way to talk about race and gender and consumption and ways in which different politically motivated groups might latch on to something like this figure and position her in ways that would serve their political ends. And I get that. And certainly our pandemic era has really been witness to a lot of, for example, anti-Asian racism. And President Trump, to my great chagrin, has been part of this.
Grab him by the pussy.
Connecting the pandemic constantly to China and creating kind of anti-Chinese racism, et cetera. So certainly Hello Kitty is an easy target, an easily manipulable tool for those who want to go there and to make those kinds of statements. At the same time, there are as many, hopefully more people, who are interested if Hello Kitty could be some kind of ambassador.
Guard! Guard! I want to see my ambassador!
Easily done. He's in the next cell.
Whether it's of nations, cultures, genders, etc., some kind of ambassador of compassion.
But in this pandemic era, few of us are entirely safe, and so many are highly vulnerable. Is it a stretch to see cuteness as a reflection of our own weakness? The starting point for this exploration of cute was why we seem to be so hungry for cuteness right now, from online memes to pet adoption. And maybe, just like Simon May's idea of the spectrum of cute, there's a continuum of answers. Catherine Stavropoulos, the psychologist and neuroscientist, sees the distractions of cute.
For some people, taking care of something outside of them takes them out of their own head. I know for me, I have dogs. If I'm focusing on feeding them, walking them, taking care of their day to day, I'm not sitting there thinking, oh my gosh, when's coronavirus going to be over? Like, you know, I'm not doom scrolling through Twitter and Facebook. I'm taking them outside for a walk. There is something to be said also for watching these creatures who live only in the moment, or maybe in the last 2 hours. So sometimes when I get anxious, I do look at my dogs and say, well, they're not anxious. Let me take a page out of their book. They're having a good day, because it's hard to not get really, really anxious right now.
For cute studies scholar Joshua Paul Dale, there is the complexity of kawaii.
In Japanese culture, you can see the power of small things quite clearly, like haiku, the world's shortest form of poetry, or bonsai trees, or Pokemon, which actually means pocket monsters.
Oh, I enjoy Pokemon. I love Pokemon.
Yes.
I particularly like that little yellow guy, and also the one that looks kind of like a cabbage. I enjoy Pokemon very much. If I had a hat, I'd be wearing it backwards. And I would be involved in a kind of cult in which we traded mushrooms with each other.
You're an absolute idiot, because that's not the question I asked you at all. I wish you could answer my questions, but I guess not.
I'm going to nod.
I don't know. Yeah, I know. I guess you're not going to be straight with me. And
well, it's when my lips move, they generally are saying something to the effect of this. I enjoy mushrooms, but I like a badger even more. And if the Cardinals try to get the badgers, then I think...
Mushrooms and badgers. Now, there's something that we can all agree on. A delicious dish.
So in Japan, people are used to the idea that small things can have power, and it's not the power to destroy. It's not a violent power, but it's also more than the power to seduce. It's the power to contain the larger world in something small.
And if you ask anthropologist Christine Yano, there's the necessity, the sincerity of cute. We need it. Especially now.
This is not a time for irony. This is a time for seeing probably how we can, hold hands and do things together. How can we create compassionate connections with each other? If there's anything that's supposed to be at the core of something like kawaii or cuteness, it is empathy. And again, I think we are all in search of comfort, emotional ease with one another, with our surroundings, which can easily feel so threatening. We are searching for upsides, are we not?